Welcome to Layman's Terms. My name is Adam Lehman. I am the host of this podcast, and I've waited my entire life to title something that I was doing Layman's Terms. I am a business owner, and I help small businesses in their marketing, and I own a company with my wife. Her name is Allie. That company is called The Wonder Jam. It's based in Columbus, Ohio, and we work with folks all over the place who need photography, design, branding, things like that, websites. And we teach a lot of workshops. We take a lot of, we do coaching, teach a lot of workshops, educational resources, all that stuff. But we just love small businesses. And so part of that is why I invited today's guest, Mike Albert. I invited him because he's been insanely helpful in us growing our business, and the way he talks about finances and business is kind of the same way you would approach finances in your own life, from a very principled perspective. So one of the things I love about Mike, and we'll kind of get into it, is he starts every conversation with his clients and the people he's giving advice to with, you know, what do you want to do? And so Allie and I talked to him. We're like, we need help with the money. And he's like, well, what are you trying to do? And we're like, what do you mean? And he kind of went there. But it was really just basic thing around your goals. So it's a very life-centered approach to business finances. So I wanted to have him on the episode to talk a little bit about that specific area, but then also just take questions from our guests. So on Layman's Terms, every episode, we take three questions from our guests, and those can be submitted in the form of a voicemail that comes in that will play on air. They might be submitted in online on our website at laymanstermspod.com, or it could be something that you just submit via, you know, connect with me on social media somewhere, ask a question, and we will put that in the queue for people to pick from. So submitting questions is insanely helpful to the podcast because it helps us, one, have content to ask our guests, but two, it also helps us decide on what kind of guests to pull in. So if we have a lot of questions about a particular topic, we'll definitely find experts and bring them in. The other thing that's true about this podcast is over the course of time, it's not going to be just about business and about finances and marketing and all that stuff. But today's episode leans pretty heavily in that direction. So if you are not interested at all in that stuff, then I don't know, you can take a nap or something. You don't need to listen if you don't want to. But if you hang out in that world, this will be insanely helpful. The other thing that you can do to help support a new, young, sprouting podcast like this one is head over to iTunes, leave a review, pound the subscribe button, because that's how Apple decides what kind of podcasts show up when people are searching for them. So it helps speak and nurture the algorithm. So if you want to help out in two ways, one, ask a question. If you go to the show notes of whatever listening device you're using to listen to this, you're going to find a phone number that you can just call in on. Probably if you have a smartphone, you can just tap the number with your thumb, and you'll be calling in, and we'll record that and play your voicemail or message on air. So we're going to get into it today. Today's episode is entitled Cash Flow. Cash flow to me is the first thing that Mike Albert, today's guest, helped us out with. He is a wizard, and he was helping Allie and I out in a time of need, and we wouldn't be anywhere we are without him today. He's critical. So buckle up, enjoy today's episode, Cash Flow with Mike Albert. Joining us on the show to help us answer some of our listeners' questions, my friend Mike Albert. Hi, Mike.
Hey.
Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Mike, tell the people a little bit about what you've got going on. What are you doing? What are you working on?
So I am working on helping people be smarter about money with their small business. So I would classify myself as a fractional CFO.
Fractional.
Fractional meaning...
Like you're just part of a CFO?
I'm just like the good parts, not the bad parts. Actually, that's kind of true.
You should say that.
That is my new...
I just told somebody that you, who knew you, that you, and I used the term fractional CFO,
yeah,
and they're like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. I was like, that's what he is.
And I actually thought I was really smart and kind of coined that, but I think other people call it.
I've heard someone else say it too, yeah, about them, which is funny.
But really what it means is, you know, when you're running a small business, you obviously go through a stage where you can't afford a full-time person to mind your money.
Right.
I help people in kind of a smaller dose that, you know, there is appropriate for them, and help them through the struggles that they have in their specific areas. So that's kind of where the fractional piece comes in. It's, you know, as much as you need, and can afford,
yeah,
to help people tighten things up so that they're on the right path.
It's beautiful. You did that for us. You helped us out with that stuff. I have a couple of questions in my own head that I want to ask you, but well, first, we can jump into, I'm trying to think if I want to ask you anything else, if we want to jump into questions. Let's jump into questions. And I think some of your, because of the questions I picked for us today, I think some of the past projects and clients and places that you've worked, some of that will probably come up.
For sure.
Because you have some firsthand experience in some of these things about helping some people select. So you've got three questions submitted. Today, the three questions I picked for Mike, we actually have four questions. We've got one person who called in, left a voicemail. Three other folks submitted online. Everyone who submitted online that I picked out as a perfect question for Mike was their name starts with a B. So that is like the B episode. Yeah, so why don't you pick somebody? You saw these questions already, so hopefully they're a little bit fresh in your brain. But why don't you pick somebody and we'll jump into it.
Sure, let's get into a question from Brandon.
From Brandon, nice. Brandon was my college roommate. And we went to high school together, went to college together. So
nice.
Brandon knows too much about me, probably.
Cool. He said, since I run a small LLC, I like staying small because I know I can produce higher value for my clients. But I also realize that I can have a higher impact if I employ a few more people. What are the issues and consequences I need to think through by saying no? I don't want to grow huge and deal with all the subsequent changes, but I just want to stay small, effective, and enjoy the art of what I'm doing. That's a tight question.
That's a great question.
And one that I wish... The reason I like the question is there's like a implied level of intentionality with what he's doing. Mm. Like he's not just showing up to the office and like dealing with what's going on. He's, which is what I call like head down work.
Mm.
He's like got head up in that he's thinking long term.
Yeah.
So... just the fact that he's like thinking and asking himself this question is usually a good sign.
This is good. This is also very much a place where kind of you help the Wonder Jam think through,
yeah,
the mechanics of how we shift. Because it was for a very long time, it was just Allie and I. It was, mm-hmm, just the two of us. And even before that, it was just Allie. She was just doing her own thing. And there was a lot of benefit, like when we were meeting with new clients and they were talking to either us or a larger firm, or when people were discussing like, why is it nice to work with a small company? Is that our overhead is insanely low.
Yep.
We're very efficient because we almost don't need to communicate. There's like no, yeah, playing telephone.
Yeah.
There's, you can just be hyper-focused, not working on clients that are kind of outside or that are stretching. There's a lot of things that are benefits to, mm-hmm, being smaller. How do you help people? Because you work with a lot of people on scaling their business. Some people, yeah, have crazy goals. Like, how do you help people think about where they should sit?
I think, you know, this question is usually informed by one of the first things I go through with people. And it's really, what do you want? If you're really clear about what you want out of your life and your, how your business facilitates that, this question is usually pretty easy to answer. So, mm, I know when we first started working through this together, with your business, that's something that you guys have a decent amount of awareness. And I mean, you guys know how you want to spend your day. you know what, you know, vibe you want during your day. You want to know how hard you want to work. You guys are very in tune with that. I think for me, when I was first starting my deal a few years ago, this is a question that I wasn't so in tune with. So that's something that I had to like really sit down and think about, like, where do I want this thing to go? Because growing a business to have, and they implied this in the question, growing a business to have 10 employees, or growing a business to sell, or growing a business to, you know, just be you so that you can lead the life that you want, they're all like insanely different paths.
Yeah.
So I think it all comes back to just being self-aware about what are the things you want to do during your day? What are the things you don't want to, what do you not want to do during your day? And then building your business to make that happen.
Yeah, truth. Brandon, one of the ways I've thought about this for me is when I take up any kind of personality test, I test extrovert. And so I like being around other people. There was times where when it was just me or just me and Allie working, it was difficult to, like, if I had like a 6 or 8 hour workday where it was just me isolated, head down, I grew really restless. Like, I didn't like that. That doesn't fit me well. I wanted to work around other people. If I wasn't working with Allie, I would probably go find another business partner or join another team. It's not like I would just would work by myself. Or I would go find a co-working space, or I would go figure out a way to like grow something so I could hire other smart people to be around. Maybe maybe they would be vendors rather than employees, if that makes sense. But so I think figuring out your own wiring, and then there's a lot of different ways to build your business to fit you. So many of my coaching clients are extroverted at one person businesses, and they really struggle with this thing saying, you know, my business isn't big enough to build a team. But I like being around a lot of people. Yeah. And so I'm like, well, then start building a team. I always think people want to find like a business excuse for why they have to grow a team or why they can't grow a team. Mm-hmm. Well, I think you can make the business fit you, depending on how you're wired or what you imagine wanting to do.
Yeah, I think there's like this social pressure to, when you start a business, to grow it big. Like, that's just like the default, what everyone thinks you're supposed to do. Yeah. But I think where you see people find a situation that they're happier with is when they have that level of self-awareness of like, no, I don't want that, because that sounds like really bad to have the pressure. Because some of the things that we worked through when we were talking about growing your team was, I don't want to grow so big that I have this responsibility that keeps me up to get 10 people paid what I think they're worth. Like, that is a lot of stress.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's something, you know, when you start talking about like, what are some of the things I should think through? Like, if you are going to grow, that is something that comes along with it, is you're now responsible for people's employment and people's progress, and they're spending 8 to 10 hours of their day with you. You want that to be a happy and productive and fun environment. So, you know, if you're carrying that stress of like, if like sales aren't great, that is going to reflect in how you treat your people.
Yeah.
So like, there is definitely a balance between growth and having a good, strong, happy team.
I think one of the things that we thought through as we were growing was pricing. Like, if we had to change our pricing, or if we ended up changing our pricing, would that really screw over the people we like taking care of and serving? Yeah. And what we found is that we could adjust rather than just, oh, we need to double our prices, even though Mike tells us to increase our prices all the time. Also, Mike hires us, so that's not like very smart for him to tell us to do. But if you think through us realizing that every time we like creeped our prices, we still found plenty of customers at that spot, and plenty of customers who were the right people. It wasn't just, I mean, you can do $100,000 photo shoots. Those exist. Mm-hmm. It's just not usually the type of brands that we're trying to work with. But when we moved from a $750 photo shoot to a $1,500 photo shoot, we still were working with small businesses who had the same heartbeat that we liked. Mm-hmm. And changing, you know, that's twice the amount of money. And so it makes a huge difference. So you can, as long as you still like serving your customer and you can find the same kind of customer you want to take care of at a new price point, that's amazing. I always liked how much more affordably we could do things when we were small. We had no overhead. Even when we were back working out of our apartment, it was like we could do stuff for, it was cheap. We still take so much better care of those people now that we have six people around than we did when we had just two of us with no office. Right. And so, yeah, it's just, you got to think about, like, do you care about impact? Are you really driven by flexibility in your own schedule? Are you really driven by not having to manage people or managing people or building a team? You got to really nail your own priorities and then go from there.
Yeah. I'm going through this a little bit right now too. I mean, I'm at the point where, you know, been working on this for like 3 years, trying to get to a point where I'm what I would consider like at capacity. And, you know, I brought my wife on to help with some things, which has been interesting.
Don't work with your wife. That's a bad.
No, it's been good.
I'm just joking.
Allison, I love
you. It's great.
You've done a great job.
Allison, I love you too, but the different one.
I think you're going to.
Mike and I have wives that are named the same, which is cheesy.
I think she's going to get promoted if she keeps it up.
Nice.
No, but I'm in a position now where, you know, she has been super helpful, but, you know, we have two kids, going to have another one. I don't know how realistic.
Is that breaking news? Are we breaking that on this podcast?
No, I think it was broken on Facebook.
I know, you announced it already.
But this is,
you're scaling your house and your company.
We're scaling our family, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But.
Sorry, my phone just went off, which producer Michael is very disappointed in me right now.
No, but I'm in a position now where I am really strongly considering bringing on, whether it be an intern or some kind of contracted help, a few days a week,
mm-hmm.
because there are some things that, you know, in my being intentional with where I'm going with my business, there are certain things that as a CFO, I do that are, very process-based and I can delegate to someone who is smart with like accounting.
Yeah.
That is a piece that I'm good at, but not the most valuable thing that I bring to the world. So yeah. I want to start shifting more of my energy to more of the strategic stuff. So I'm in the process of bringing someone on for a few days a week to help with some of the more process-driven things that I can kind of hand off to someone. So as I'm thinking through it, you know, you start to think about what kind of person do I want to bring on? And I don't mean like, do I want to bring them on as a W-2? Do I want to bring them on as a 1099?
Mm.
So this is one thing you'd want to think through, like, you know, is this a full-time employee that you want to pay benefits and payroll taxes to, or is this someone that has a little more flexibility and you're paying them W-2, 1099, and, you know, each one has its, like, sets of goods and bads.
Yeah.
You know, if you have an employee, they're a little more committed, but you're going to pay payroll taxes and things like that. You know, if you have a 1099 person, then there's more flexibility. So you got to find someone who wants that, which is sometimes easier, sometimes more difficult. Yeah. But so that's another thing you got to really think
about. Yeah. Through. What's the structure of what that's all going to look like? Brandon, I would just say, ultimately, if you can figure out what you're doing that's like delivering $100 an hour work, and if there's probably some things that you do in the course of operating your life or business that's not worth $100 to you or to a client, customer. Can you bring in other people to maybe either deliver that at a different price point for your clients? So if, you know, there's some things I do where I help people sort of build out their sales funnel, which is a valuable sort of strategic relationship. But sending people weekly reports on their Facebook ads is not worth $100 an hour. But if I'm if people are used to paying me $100 an hour and I'm sending them reports, I'm like, hey, I spent 15 minutes on this, you owe me $25. That's weird. And so figuring out, can I hire somebody else to do that for them at a different price point? Or mm-hmm. can I hire somebody else to free me up more so I can do more $100 an hour work? You know, you can think through all those, but it's got to start with your goals. Let's jump into another question.
Cool.
Whichever one you want to jump
Let's
into.
See. Let's go down. Brad asked, what are some good ways to decide the makeup of your business? retail, wholesale, distributor, regional, or national, etc.?
I thought this was a good question that a lot of people that we work with, especially product-based businesses, don't even think through. Like, people just get excited about, oh, I made a, you know, thing. Yeah. I made shirts. I made, like, whatever. So I'm just going to go sell them everywhere. Like, how do you tell people to break those down, think through those things to decide, am I going to sell this inside of Walmart? Am I going to sell this only online? Am I going to sell it via Amazon?
Yeah, when I think through this, I mean, being a pure, just thinking of it like as a pure numbers thing.
Yeah.
You know, retail, selling direct to a consumer, either through a website or through a brick and mortar store, that is going to be your highest margin, meaning if you sell something for $100 that costs you $10 to make, you know, you make $90 in margin. As soon as you introduce someone who's a wholesaler or a distributor, you know, you're paying them to sell your product.
Yeah.
So you're gonna cut a little bit of that out for them because they need to make money too. So that is like one of the trade-offs that you're going to give when you start to go a wholesale distributor route, but you're also gaining either, like, let's think of it like from like a drink standpoint. Like, if I wanted to create like a
juice.
Energy drink,
the Wonder juice.
The Wonder juice.
Yeah. This is like a fake project that we're working on currently. Like, it's, we're working on a dumb project for ourselves, and Wonder juice will be a thing. So nice.
For like a case study,
this is breaking. Yeah.
Breaking news. So if you're going to so if I was going to launch this thing on my own, I mean, it's going to take a lot of boots on the ground, a lot of, like, it's going to be very hard to get it out into stores and do it myself.
Yeah.
If you have someone who's going to distribute it for you and they just already have this built-in network, obviously the speed at which that happens is, it's insane. So
insane slow or fast?
Insanely fast. Like, if you were going to let someone else distribute it for you, or wholesale.
Let's talk about my coffee company, because this is, I'm like this is where my head is.
Oh, that's great.
Right? Yeah. So I have a coffee. Perfect. I roast my own coffee, and I sell it to people sometimes. And I sell it for $9 for a bag of coffee.
Yep.
Like, let's just use this as an example.
Yeah.
It takes me a number of things. I buy unroasted coffee. I roast it, market it, ship it, put it up for sale, figure out when somebody has a typo in their shipping address, how to handle all of that stuff.
Yeah.
So like, let's talk about that. So how would you tell me to think through, or how might it look different if I went one of those kind of a couple of different routes that Brad lays out?
So if you do what you're doing,
yeah,
retail through your e-commerce site,
direct to consumer only from an online store.
Yeah. So you really don't have any middleman in there.
Right.
Right. So that extra margin that's, you know, let's say you make $7 every time you sell a bag.
Yeah.
Let's say that. Is that good?
No. Yeah. I mean, but that's not true, but that's great.
Okay. Let's say you have amazing margins at $7.
Yeah.
Now when you introduce, like, if you were to go to all the coffee shops in Columbus and say, hey, I want you to carry this, they're not going to do it for nothing. Right. So
just out of the goodness of their heart, sell my product for me, please.
Actually, coffee shops may do that.
No, they won't. They're roasting their own.
You're going to give up maybe another couple dollars for them because they need to make a little bit of money every time they sell your product. So your margin then gets cut down to, instead of $7, now you're at $5.
So if they were paying me $5 a bag versus $9, and then they sell it for $9, so they're making $4 on that gap, I'm making $4 less off of that.
But you have to think then, you know, how much extra volume am I going to sell by doing that? And
so could I sell 1,000 more bags a week or 100 more bags a week? Or what's the answer to how much I could sell?
And I would think that if you actually did that math, if you said, like, all right, if I'm considering one or the other, make it binary and I'm either going to retail this or I'm going to wholesale it. If it's just one or the other.
Not going to do both, but just, only.
Gotcha. The way I would do the math is I would say, all right, how many do I think I can sell by myself through my website? How much do I make every time I sell it? What is that number?
Right.
And then I would say, all right, if I went with scenario B and I wholesaled it at 10 different coffee shops and I think I could sell 100 a week,
that's
a lot. It'd be very good.
Yeah.
And that I only make that reduced amount of margin. What is that number?
Does it still, yeah.
So at that point, you just compare the result of each of those and you'd say, all right, you know, usually I would think that one or the other would be pretty obvious.
Right.
The obvious choice. And it, I don't think you really have to pick one or the other. Like you could, like
you can in your scenario, yeah, you can do both. Yeah.
I think the only other consideration I would have in this would be really protecting the brand. If yeah. that, like some companies could wholesale all day long. Like I think of, there's a company in town called Rogue Fitness.
Yeah.
And they're like really popular in the CrossFit world and kind of branching out.
Yeah, they're getting
even
wider. Yeah.
Like they're, you're seeing them in like normal like everyday gyms now. And they have owned their own retail and district. Like they have not wholesaled to anyone.
Really?
They protected the brand. It's always been under their,
oh, their control. Yeah, yeah.
They could have very easily, multiple times within this process of them growing to where they are today, gone a wholesale route and like started to sell on, DickSportingGoods.com.
Yeah.
Like all these other branches, and they could have probably done well, but they wanted to protect that brand so well.
Yeah.
So like that's the other consideration is, you know, if you, in your example, put your product in a coffee shop that is run down and looks like crap, like that's a yeah. reflection on your brand to some degree. So
well, the barista working that day is uneducated and doesn't right. talk about your stuff in the correct way, or
they make they a leave bad it, cup of coffee or,
yeah, they leave it sitting out for too long, so it's not fresh anymore, or they don't push it or promote it. Maybe they have higher margin on a different product. This is the thing I've seen a lot of real small businesses who we've worked with really struggle with when they get brought into other places.
Yeah.
They're not doing enough volume to make a huge impact on that store that they're selling in or that other channel they're selling through.
Right.
And so they don't get very great of treatment. Whereas if you have a larger brand, more followers, if you look at like how, yeah. I'm trying to think, the other thing I would think through with coffee, the other thing I would think through the flip side of that is it a pain in the butt to ship out everything, to have an order come in on a Monday, roast, and then send? That takes a big chunk of time that otherwise I wouldn't need, if that was sitting through other channels or through other coffee shops. Or if I was getting on to like Amazon and shipping a whole thing to their distribution center and letting them just sell it there.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of headaches that you don't have to deal with if you're wholesaling.
Yeah.
Or if you're selling it through other shops or stores. Typically you're like, oh, I have one relationship with a store and they sell 300 of my things. You got to think through that. The other thing I would think through is if I invest in a really nice roaster, I can start buying beans, like unroasted beans at a way larger scale, my margins get huge, where right now they're really small because I'm buying things at the smallest level. I get no price discounts. I'm roasting things in like really small batches, which is takes a lot of time to roast a pound.
Yeah.
So it's I'm really limited in my capacity because I am owning that relationship.
Yeah.
So you might be able to really blow that up and create huge margins for yourself on prices or other things if you're able to find a distribution relationship. It's a good question. A lot of people don't think of it. And it's complicated and nuanced and it's always shifting. You know, it's like you get Amazon promoting and selling your stuff for you. Someone else might get on there and like become 13 cents cheaper than you and you got to drop your prices or you got to, you know, so it's I always like owning the customer relationship because people will stay loyal to a brand if that's the relationship. But if people are buying things through Amazon, you know, someone's searching fresh coffee and ordering the top result. So you got to, there's trade-offs for
it's
all
of it. It's almost understanding your client.
Yeah.
Like who are the people you want to help?
Yeah. From a product standpoint, who's it for and how do they buy stuff? Hey guys, I wanted to remind you of a sponsor of our podcast. It is ConvertKit. They are an email marketing provider for bloggers, ebook writers, YouTubers, and content creators. And if you head over to laymanstermspod.com/ConvertKit, you're going to get an offer for a free month trial to get in there and give it a spin.
They are an amazing tool. They have an amazing support team. They're very easy to talk to. They respond to things super quickly. A lot of people who are on their team also have their own online businesses, and they have their own email marketing that they're running, and so they know how to make things happen. So check them out, ConvertKit. So thankful for their sponsorship and support of the podcast.
You want to jump into, let's jump into the next question from Bridget.
Bridget asked, startup entrepreneurs are often encouraged to have an exit plan. Do you have one? Do you think that it's needed?
Yeah. This is a good question because Allie and I talk about this all the time. I was like, the Wonder GM is a bad business for like the exit plan because we're not built to sell it. And it's not the type of thing, when you see people start agencies like this, like they don't run them till they're 70.
Yeah.
Like they don't run them till they retire. Something else typically happens. Either the company morphs or they leave and go do something else, or they sell off some part of it to some other thing. But rarely do they sell for enough money, like in a significant way. So the exit strategy for the Wonder GM feels iffy.
Yeah, I don't know if it's... I think you definitely need to be thinking about... this is basically asking, should I think about the long term?
Right, yeah.
And I think not every business is or should be structured to have a quote-unquote exit. Like, not every business owner wants to sell the business. There are a lot of business owners that... you think about some of these family businesses that have been around for, you know, 100 years. Like, that was never their goal, to sell the business.
Yeah.
And the race or the path to building a business that you want to sell versus the path of the business that you want to start and facilitate, you know, a lifestyle that you want is way different.
Yeah.
And I think as long as you're intentional about, again, what you want, this is like almost goes back to what Brandon asked.
Yeah.
It's really,
this is where you start with everybody you work with though. It's like, what do you care about and what do you want? And like, you want to spend more time at home working less, or you want to work a ton and sell your company, or you want to like
it's funny because what do you want to do? 5 years ago, if I was like came in here as a coaching client, and the first thing you asked me was like, "What do I want?" I'd be like, "What the fuck? Like, what?
Who cares?
Like, I am trying to fix this problem."
Yeah,
but like you have to really start to really fix the problem. You really need to start way down the rabbit hole of, you know, like existentially, what do you want?
Yeah, like why do you exist? What is the purpose of your life? No, I think, yeah.
I mean, if you don't answer that, you're always going against the stream.
Yeah, there's a million correct answers. Like, there's not a right answer. Yep. And you watch, you know, it's like we grow up our whole life going through school, and we're taught there's right answers, or there's better answers, or this is how somebody does it. Mm-hmm. And we even get into college, and people go through an MBA program, and they like dive deep into case studies of this is how brands made decisions or entered a new market or grew their something. But you might go run a business flawlessly, following all the right things to do, and it doesn't work. Or you might be amazing for like a decade or two, and then your Toys R Us and you're like bankrupt. Yeah. Right. Or like the world is shifting all the time and businesses grow out of touch quickly and they grow. And so I think all of this thinking through your exit plan, why are you doing all this stuff? Like you have to get good at change. And I might sit here today I turned 32 yesterday, or this week, whenever this podcast drops, but we'll say yesterday because from when we're recording. I turned 32 yesterday. I don't know when I'm 40. If I plan my exit strategy right now, like this is how I want to get out of this thing, I don't know if that will be available to me later. I don't know what the world will be like. I don't know if everybody will be like buying stuff with Bitcoin, probably, right? So like, if I was reading my Facebook ads correctly, it's like everything's going to be Bitcoin. But like we don't know what that world's going to be like. Mm-hmm. All we can do is make guesses and then work and pay attention and evolve. So I'm avoiding Bridget's question because when she wrote this was the only question I was like, man, this is going to expose that I like don't have a good answer for this. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about, you've helped some people plan their exits or even go through with their exits. Mm-hmm. Like what... maybe tell some stories of like what have those different exits looked like so that people who are listening to this can maybe think, oh, I never thought like that's a possibility for my business.
Sure. So I had a client that was here locally, was a education technology platform, and they basically helped K through 12 with their scheduling. So based on, and they took some like non-traditional data, like did some personality tests and basically put them with the best schedule for their like individual brain and their goals.
Pretty cool. Yeah.
Right. Super cool. Being in like that technology, like software industry, the typical path is we're going to raise a bunch of money. We're going to burn a bunch of money, but we want to exit this thing at, you know, $200 million or, you know, even more. That path and exit is way different than some other people in town that we know that have a platform for freelancer. What's it called? Harvest.
Yeah.
Is it Harvest?
Yeah.
Harpoon. Sorry.
Harpoon. Yeah, yeah.
Harpoon app. They're a couple founders who just like took it on as a project. They built this platform for freelancers to be able to
manage all their finances.
Yeah. It's just the two of them. They don't have any intention of raising a bunch of money. They just want to build a business that they're passionate about. Those are both in the same space.
They both are the same like business model, right? Like as far as the mechanics of what that business looks like.
Subscription-based, like, but completely different paths, completely different exits. So the steps that they need to walk through are way different. Like Harpoon app needs to keep their overhead very low. They're going to make small incremental changes that are going to be valuable over the long term to their clients. They want to grow, I'm sure they take quick growth, but like they want something that's sustainable over the long run that, you know, 5 years down the road is very profitable for them personally.
Yeah.
The path for the other company, the education technology company, is like we need to pour rocket fuel on this thing and get as much done as possible because, you know, we need to solidify ourselves as like the one in this space so that one of these big, huge conglomerates can give us $200 million as an exit. So
can we start with $1 million and then sell it for $200 million?
Right.
So
the reason why it's important to like know which direction you want to go is, you know, every day as a business owner, you're going to be faced to make a decision. And when you're making decisions, just like kind of arbitrarily or what feels good kind of in a vacuum, it's not necessarily going to lead you to making the decision that's the best long-term decision.
Right.
So like, I think of it as like, you may change your mind about what your quote exit plan is or what your long-term goal is. Like I would call this a long-term goal.
Yeah.
More than an exit plan. And I think it's going to help facilitate you making decisions that are smart to help you get where you think you want to go, as opposed to like, what is the best decision in a vacuum at this exact moment that's going to...
Right.
Yeah.
No, I think that's so true. I am not that motivated by an exit plan, but I am very motivated by thinking through in 5 or 10 years, will I be doing the same thing I'm doing today? And the answer is probably no. Most businesses won't be doing the exact same thing.
Sure. And so it's going to change.
Yeah. So what do I need to be doing today so that in 10 years, it's not like... You know, I'm not like Best Buy, right? Where like all of a sudden the world just changed around me and I'm done. Mm-hmm. Like it's over. So we think through how can we Blockbuster was what I was thinking, not Best Buy. Best Buy still exists.
Yeah.
For some reason.
Yeah, there's a quote. if you don't know where you're aiming, you'll definitely miss.
Yeah.
And I think this, like, you at least want to give yourself a chance to hit the target that you want to hit.
Yeah.
So you have to pick something. And if you don't, you know, you don't really have any kind of guiding long-term vision.
Truth. Bridget, I would say this. I think Allie and I talk about this a lot when we're thinking through how we structure the Wonder Jam is I guarantee there will be a recession or at least a correction at some point, but a recession probably. And the last time we had one, was exactly when Allie and I graduated from college. And people talk about, I see like tiny businesses all the time talk about being recession proof. The number of independent or freelancers during the last recession exploded, like grew significantly. And so my bet would be that the opportunities for one-person businesses or very small businesses during the next one will do the same. That there will be more opportunities for one person to say, hey, this large company, they just have a hard time being nimble. Mm-hmm. And so part of what I want the Wonder Jam to do is stay nimble so that we can take advantage of those shifts faster than other people can, where other people are going to go through layoffs or, you know, if McDonald's was our client and McDonald's, their mm-hmm. business gets cut in half, then all of a sudden, what are we going to get paid at the end of that day? So you can think through, that's a great question. And one that I always am thinking through. I don't have a good answer though, but I think about it a lot.
Hi guys, I want to give a shout out to our sponsor. It is Harpoon App. And Harpoon App is an online success platform for freelancers, studios, and small agencies. And specifically, I find Harpoon to be amazing for freelancers. And so a couple of folks who work at the Wonder Jam are contractors. They're not full-time employees because, they can go take on freelance work. They can go do design elsewhere. They can shoot photos elsewhere. So they're contractors. And one of the things that we do for them is I help them get set up on Harpoon. And it's such a useful tool for them to track their expenses so they can have a nice document to give to their tax person when it comes around to tax time. They've got really cool goal setting features where you can pick a yearly or monthly goal that you would like to hit for your revenue. You can see how far off you are and it will kind of track that over time. A lot of freelancers deal with, you know, sort of revenue that goes up and down and can be all over the place. So you might have a huge month and then a slow month. And Harpoon kind of helps you see the big picture as far as what's going on and then make smart choices for how you run your business. So if you go to harpoonapp.com/wonder, WONDER, you're going to get a 14-day free trial. You can use Wonder as a coupon code, WONDER, as a coupon code, and it's going to give you 20% off the first 3 months of your billing, of your subscription. So there's a couple of different ways to jump in there. The people who build Harpoon are awesome. The way they run their business is awesome. They're inspiring in a bunch of different ways, and I'm so pumped to have them as a sponsor of Layman's Terms. So thank you, Harpoon, and the team. And if you want to, you go check it out and let us know what you think. Let's jump into one. Let's do one more. Is that cool? Can we do Chris's question? Mm-hmm. So Chris was a champion and he called in and left us a voicemail. So we're going to play Chris's voicemail and then we will respond.
Adam, hey, it's Chris here in Indianapolis. I have a question for you. The term sales funnel gets thrown around quite a bit, specifically when it comes to marketing, web pages, all of that. It's very confusing. I think sometimes it's used in a couple of different ways. But if you could help break that down, the question is, what is one and how do I know that I've got it and it's set up well? Look forward to hearing your answer, brother. Peace.
That's a good question. I think a lot of people get confused by that's a phrase that's very popular. It's very popular for salespeople mm-hmm. to know, like, this is a cold lead, meaning a person who we don't know if they're interested or not in our product, but to someone who might be, but a potential customer. Or are they a hot lead? They've moved from cold maybe to warm to hot, like they're interested and they've signaled in some way that they would like to buy something. So in these, like whenever you're talking to a salesperson or whenever you're about to buy something, mm-hmm. you're in someone's either what they call pipeline or sales funnel. Yeah. And this is all transferred onto the digital marketing space, the internet marketing space, where I might have a sales funnel that's purely automated, mm-hmm. to where you download an ebook on our website. You're going to receive a number of emails from us telling us you should go then buy this or check out this thing that we offer. Maybe you start seeing some Facebook ads around that same time being like, hey, you should. And those are all things I'm doing to nurture people along the sales funnel, ultimately landing on some checkout page to buy some kind of product or education. So if you're listening to this and I'm doing a good job at my job, hopefully you find yourself in some kind of sales funnel for the Wonder Jam. But so, Mike, when you're helping all kinds of people think through their finances.
Yeah.
How does someone's sales funnel or pipeline or that like big list of potential customers who might show up someday, how does that affect, how do you help people plan through or think through those things?
Yeah. So this comes up a lot when I work with technology-based companies that are, that have a home on the internet. So I think some people don't realize that every website likely that you click on, you're basically getting added to their sales funnel if they're doing a decent job.
Yeah.
Like you are entering a path to purchase whatever it is that they're selling. So when I'm working with a lot of these software companies, like we'll look at each stage of the sales funnel. So you probably know the stages a lot better than I do, but we're really looking at like how effective are they at moving someone from like phase one of the funnel down into like the lower level.
Yeah.
So we're really looking through that conversion rate of someone being a cold lead down to they know you and you know you probably have a better context to describe what each level of that is. But we're really looking at like how effective are you at moving people down the funnel. And it all boils down to, of all of the people that end up in your funnel, how many of them convert into either a customer, a one-time customer, or a repeat customer.
Right.
So that like net conversion rate is really what.
So if you look at yourself and you have 100,000 Facebook fans and you have not that many customers, like what is the problem? Why is that? And it's, a sales funnel isn't necessarily a thing. A sales funnel is a tool to help you as a business owner or as a salesperson figure out what do I fix or like what are the right next actions to take.
Mm-hmm.
So in the same way, you know, you might take a Myers-Briggs personality test. It doesn't say that that's who you are. It doesn't mean like you're an ENFP and that's all you can ever be and that says everything there is to say about you.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a tool to get some insight of how you might approach things in a better, easier way that works for you. And a sales funnel is the same thing. In people who go through coaching with me, the number one, the top two things we're always talking about is one, are they building a business that they actually like and like want to keep working in, mm-hmm. or are they going to build a business that they have to quit? And we help them identify that through a bunch of personality stuff. Or, and the other main area of topic of conversation is helping people build out what does their sales funnel look like. So how do people, and I would say, I always identify a sales funnel in three main stages.
Mm-hmm.
You have strangers, people who don't know that you exist, who are potential customers. Mm-hmm. So the first question I always have people answer is how do people know that you exist?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times businesses who are struggling don't have a good answer for that question.
Mm-hmm.
They might say, oh, they see me on Instagram. Well, like how do you show up in a stranger's Instagram feed?
Yeah.
How do you show up? How does a person decide to search for you? How does all of that stuff? The next stage, you go from strangers to a person who's interested, meaning they've at some way signaled so that you can understand that they care and would like to learn more, or they want to follow along or something like that. And then thinking through the conversion, how many customers mm-hmm. do I have? So at the most basic level, and when I outline it with people, we go a little deeper than we go into like six. Actually, this is what I'm going to do. We have on the show notes for this episode, I'm going to include a link to, I'm building out an online course right now that is literally the sales funnel, walking through that with people and helping them build their own. So one of the things that listeners of this can do is they can go to laymanstermspod.com and they can find the show notes for Mike Albert when he's on here. You can find episode one, this episode. And in the link there, I'll share a link. I have an online course that I'm building that is literally just helping businesses walk through their sales funnel and build that out. So I think that should be helpful. And I try and walk through it in layman's terms, in normal, everyday human words and verbiage.
That will be super valuable.
Yeah.
I'm super excited you're doing that. I mean, you did, when I went through your coaching over a year ago, and we were working through this, for me, it was really eye-opening. And to this day, I have a Trello list of all of the things, because one of the like things you get out of that exercise with you is, these are the things that you should be doing to progress people down
your
pipeline. And to this day, whenever I'm feeling like stuck or like things aren't progressing, like I'll hop on there and I'll look, oh, I should send random emails to people and like say, hey, what's up? And I should like do this and that. So like, it's super helpful for me to have those.
Yeah, no, it's we do it for ourselves. We just went through this. I'm like, be as transparent as possible, 'cause I like to tell people, but a week ago, our whole team, our workshops weren't being signed up for as quickly as before. We used to launch them and they would sell out pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
And that was slowing down a lot. And we were like, why is this happening? And one of the things that we realized is we built a sales funnel for ourselves, like on a whiteboard, and just kind of outlined what was going on. And what we had done is we had done a really good job of educating our current people about workshops. We probably had marketed through that whole chunk of people.
Mm-hmm.
And we needed to get into a new market. And we also needed to shift up like what we were offering to people. We're getting a little bit repetitive in the type of workshops and things that we're offering.
So you need to expand the top of the funnel.
Yeah, so we needed to expand the top of funnel. We had a whole team meeting where we sat down. We're like, how do we get in front of strangers? Mm-hmm. You know, and this is, we teach people how to do this all the time, but we have to take, just because you can teach somebody doesn't mean you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Or that it doesn't need some new, innovative.
The other part of that that you were talking about that's like insanely fascinating to me is when a company will look at like a certain part of the funnel where they're not having a great conversion from like one phase to the next. There's something that's broken, or like, say for example, you were sending people to a web page to sign up for workshops that like was down.
Yeah.
And you didn't realize it, right? You didn't realize the page was down. If you were watching that conversion rate, you'd see that it just like dropped off the face of the earth. Or there's so many like micro improvements that people can make along that path with like testing and things like that. And that starts to get a little complicated, but like that's the part that like is super fascinating to me, where you see someone go from, you know, converting 10% from one level to the next to like 20% because they made a change in copy or something was explained better, or like that is like super interesting to me.
It's just get a piece of paper and outline how do people, what are the steps that people go from of they have no clue that you exist to being customers. And if you think through what are the steps in there, you can think through, oh, do I need to add another step to help like nurture people along? Or do I need to, you know, what do I need to do to help that whole thing happen? So
it sounds like empathy might be important.
Empathy is important. Put yourself in the shoes of your customers. Usually helps you be innovative in sales or marketing. But yeah, sales funnel, it can easily not feel like a funnel. Sometimes when I outline people's sales funnel, they'll be like,
oh man,
they'll be like, it's just two straight lines. It's just a pipe. And it doesn't, and very few people are getting into it. So there's a huge potential audience and nobody knows they exist. I worked with a woman yesterday who has like no marketing. She signed up to do coaching with me. I Googled, I couldn't find her on the internet anywhere. And she's like, works with high-end clientele. She does a killer job, but she just kind of like hates the internet. And so anyways, all of this to be, I was like, she was like, yeah, all my business is based on referrals. I do a great job. I get great referrals. I go, you have no idea how many people do the thing I just did.
Yeah.
You're paying me. And I was like, I don't even know who this person is.
Yeah.
I'm about to go talk to you. And I can't find out anything about you. And there's a lot of people who hear that you're great at your job, can't find anything about you, so they're not going to make a choice. They can find no reviews, no confirmation, no thing that says, oh, yeah, you should definitely go hire her. But what you've done is you've created in that person the need to buy something like what you offer, and they went and they Googled it and they found a different person.
Mm-hmm.
So you might have created the sale for somebody else in being amazing at your job and not converting those people into yours. I was like, you have no visibility. Her business has grown steadily over 4 years, modestly and conservatively, but organically and steadily over 4 years. And I was like, you have no idea where you would be if you had a website that had your name on it.
Yeah, hearing you describe that, it just like makes me think that so many small business owners, they count strictly on referrals.
Yeah.
And word of mouth and just good.
Or a small, so Chris owns a shop.
Yeah.
In Fountain Square, neighborhood of Indianapolis. I'm pretty certain it's in Fountain Square. But part of what, so a shop like that might really rely on word of mouth and foot traffic.
Mm-hmm.
And you might really hope like, man, someone's going to come in today. Which is fine. But what if you thought through, okay, on using the internet, using simple tools, like how many people do I get in front of in a normal week?
Yeah.
And how can I double that number in a not gross, spammy way? It is going to be simple. It's going to be things like share 2 photos on Instagram a week instead of 1.
Yeah. And I think there's a couple businesses that do something that's so simple, but like now that I'm hearing you describe this, and I think it's probably one of the reasons they do so well in our community here in Columbus is like Homage and Native do one thing. They have a little notepad at the cash wrap to write your email.
Yeah.
And may seem like something that's like not very valuable, but if you think of 365 every year, say, you know, 5 people a day put their name down.
Yeah.
And you add them to an email list. Yeah. And you can just once a month shoot them an email and say, hey, these are the things we did this month. Yeah. This, like, you guys do a great job of this. It doesn't seem any kind of sales related. You guys do have, you point out things that your clients are doing, but it's like, it's just like, hey, we exist. And these are the things we're doing.
Yeah.
And most people, I don't read their emails, but like when you guys send one, I'm like, oh, they're doing cool, fun things.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem like much, but even something like that for a small business owner that isn't really building that list or building that sales funnel, like that would be a great first step to really just getting started.
You got to remind people, let alone taking that email list and then turning it into Facebook ads and doing like a lookalike audience for all of your customers, whatever.
Which is another thing. That's amazing.
I have a different course for that. Or you can Google how to do that. It's not, or you can pay me someday to teach you. Just sign up for an email list. I'll tell you about it whenever it launches.
How much money, how much do you think small business, like take Chris, for example, if he had a tight sales funnel, like what do you think the impact would be if he had, you know, Facebook ads running and, you know, email, a good email
program? Well, so I ask people all the time, to be fair, Chris has heard me talk about this, so this is for everybody else. Could we talk about, I did a workshop in Indianapolis that Chris came to. Mm. But I always talk about why you can run a Facebook ad at a minimum for $5 a day.
Yeah.
So that's $150 a month to reach probably 10 to 15,000 people, roughly. You could just expect to reach that. And if you're reaching less than that, you're not spending your whole budget. So you'd spend less than that. Those are just generic numbers. But when I say, why are you not spending that? It's because people don't know that it converts into anything, which tells me they don't have visibility into a sales funnel.
Yeah.
And so, like for our workshops, for example, I know if I show up in front of X number of people, a certain percentage of them will convert.
Yeah.
That's different than our photography business. Like our photography business, we don't always have capacity for somebody to sign up for something. And so our sales funnel for that looks a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
But each of those things has a sales funnel. And when I know what's going on, people don't market themselves or they don't invest in themselves or they don't even speak about themselves confidently in a group of strangers because they're not confident that they'll be able to take a stranger, provide the right solution, and get them to come through. And they don't know how to talk to people who are strangers in a not gross way. They don't know how to let people turn people off effectively without alienating them. People don't know how to, if you knew your sales funnel, you would spend at least $100 a month on Facebook ads for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Or 150. I do it sometimes with us. I turn them off like every other week when our workshops are more filled up. I'll just be like, cool. I don't need to run this 24/7. I can spend $70 a month on Facebook ads. So The only reason you wouldn't do that is if your sales funnel is not tight or even sort of put together.
Yeah.
For sure.
Because you can run Facebook ads to a detriment of like they're really not going anywhere. There's no call to action when they get there.
Yeah.
It's not clear what they're supposed to do.
And but even that, even for businesses like Chris's that was a foot traffic business or businesses like the Wonder Jam that's like, I just need somebody who someday needs photography to think of me.
Yeah.
Like even in a remind, like when someone runs a ad in the newspaper or gets press on some other website, you have no way of knowing that that's going to turn into stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But people pay so much for that.
Yeah.
But the Facebook thing just confuses, like it just confuses people and they're unwilling to treat it also like a billboard.
Mm-hmm.
It can track conversions, but if you're a foot traffic business, you know what you're doing.
Yeah, I think most people that play around with Facebook ads don't have a clear goal with what they're trying to do with that ad.
Yeah.
Like each ad should have like a clear objective of why you're doing it. And I think they don't see results, so they get discouraged. And
truth. You got to build at least a basic sales funnel, figure out where the problems are, and then dump more people in the top of it.
I'm going to have to download that thing again that you're going to put on the website.
Oh, yeah.
On the internet.
The online course. I'll put it on the internet.
Because now that we're talking about it, I realize I'm not. I need to do good.
I need to do good. I dig it. This has been... Those were awesome questions. We could talk about that stuff forever. This is so fun.
Yeah.
I'm like realizing how long we've been recording. I'm like,
it's been 4 hours.
But
if you've made it this far, thank you.
Why do you have this much time? No. Thanks a ton for listening. If you need help with finances or if your business is kind of stuck or you feel like a little confused, you should go to mikealbert.co. MikeAlbert.co, and you'll see information about kind of how Mike helps people there. You can also hit him up on Twitter, Instagram. That's all there. You can find links to all of this on laymansterspod.com. Thanks for being on, Mike. It's been
thanks for having me.
Awesome.
Always jam.
I dig it. Peace.